Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig. I'm your host, Aaron Makem. This week, I'm going to be talking about the Schwarzenegger pick, Conan the Barbarian from 1982. Now, one of the things that I found kind of interesting when I was researching some of the background of this film, I was specifically looking at the amount of money the movie made. This is the first time I came across a film where it actually includes rentals, and I've never seen that before, and I'm not exactly sure why that came up, because I looked at other films, they've never showed this information, but for some reason, they have the info right here. So the movie had a $20 million budget estimated. The opening weekend, it made $9 million. The rentals were $23 million. Overall, the gross was almost $40 million. So the movie did fairly well, and it's a well-known film. Now, you know, I think a lot of people forget that Conan is a comic book character. At the time they made the movie, that was, I think that they were basing their ideas off of a lot of what had happened in Marvel Comics, as opposed to directly off the Robert E. Howard property. I remember when this movie came out, and it was a big deal for everybody that was a fan that had read the comic, and the fact that we were getting something, even though the comics were based off of a novels and based off of something else, they weren't an original idea for the most part, it was still very exciting. You know, we had Conan and we had Swamp Thing. Those are the movies we had coming out that were comic related and were big deals and weren't of course, you know, you in the 60s, you had the Batman series and things like that. People knew of that. But this was something that was actually more gritty, more realistic, more like the comics. I remember when the film came out. And for me, this movie is always going to hold a special place in my heart. When the movie came out, I was younger, and there was no way I was going to be allowed to go see this film because it had an R rating. And I remember that they always had the At the Movies show, where the only place you could ever see trailers, because there was no internet, folks. I know. Try to imagine that, kids. No internet. So what happened was every time they showed like an At the Movies thing, it was on the weekends. The different channels would have it, and because it was syndicated, I would watch it. I would just to see what was going on with Conan. I remember Entertainment Tonight, I think that was the show. Had a big write-up on how the horses were being mistreated, how they were really falling and things like that. Now, I mean, that might have been true. There still seems to be a little bit of speculation around that. But it was a big deal. They made a big deal about how bloody and how gory this movie was. And right now, it's very tame by comparison. And I think now the R rating for this movie, which at the time everybody talked about, oh, you know, it's so bloody and so adult oriented and this and that and the other. I think it's very tame by comparison to even something you can see on HBO like Game of Thrones or something like that. I mean, yeah, we have a few boobs in it, and yeah, we have some pretty cool sword fights, and we do have some blood and gore, but it's not over the top like you see now. I mean, it's not. You know, you have the blood and gore, but it's not so visceral like you see on like Game of Thrones or something like that. You know, in researching the movie, the only person they ever wanted to play Conan was Arnold Schwarzenegger. This was his first role where he actually spoke. He did. This is his first, as far as I'm concerned, this was his first movie. Yeah, he did Hercules in New York, but come on. And of course, you know, you did a documentary, Pumping Iron, but I'm not exactly sure if that counts since it's a documentary. This is the first film as like a full-on actor. And this is a movie that I felt was, when I saw it, you know, you have like in the first half hour, maybe 30 lines of dialogue, maybe. And if you cut out the scene in the beginning with him and his father, then you have like a whole lot of quiet at the beginning of the film where they actually let the film tell the story. And we see everything that, you know, we see how Conan develops from a boy into a man, and his very, you know, in the film, I feel as though he is kind of dumbed down a little bit granted, this is kind of like his beginning. But I think in the comics and in the stories, we see him become very good at strategy and very good at war and winning battles. He's not he's not just, you know, chilling out and you know, he's not the muscle. He's not just the muscle. He's not just a grunt. You know, he has ideas and things like that. And of course, we've had a lot of rumors floating around over the last 2 years about them doing a King Conan film. It seems as though that is dead in the water now, which is a real shame because that would this is the perfect film for him now. He's the right age, and if you've ever read the King Conan comics, I mean, this would fit in perfectly. The first sound clip I have here, pulled from the film, is a conversation he has with his father. Now, his father's a sword maker, and we see in the beginning a steel sword being poured, which was something that would never happen. You would not pour steel into a form to make a sword because it would make a really crappy sword. It would break very easily. Anybody that knows even the minutest little bit about metalworking knows that if you're going to make a sword, you start out with a piece of steel and you fold it repeatedly in order to add strength. You don't cast a sword. So but it makes for a great intro. And for those people that don't know, I mean, it really, it's, you know, it's the sword that he carries in the film. So it's a big deal.
Fire and wind come from the sky, from the gods of the sky. But Crumb is your god. Crumb, and he lives in the earth. Once giants lived in the earth, Conan. And in the darkness of chaos, they fooled Crumb. And they took from him the enigma of steel. Crumb was angered, and the earth shook. And fire and wind struck down these giants, and they threw their bodies into the waters. But in their rage, the gods forgot the secret of steel and left it on the battlefield. And we who found it are just men. Not gods, not giants, just men. And the secret of steel has always carried with it a mystery. You must learn its riddle, Conan. You must learn its discipline. For no one in this world can you trust. Not men, not women, not beasts. This you can trust.
Now, those of you who listened to the show in the past know that one of the things that piqued my interest in doing this show, and it wasn't on the list, was the fact that there was a character in Hell Comes to Frogtown who I was like, man, she looks familiar, and found out that she was, in fact, in Conan the Barbarian. And so that's one of the things that she plays Valerie in here. And that's one of the things that made me think of this film and decide, you know, I really needed to cover this because this is one of my favorite movies. It just really has a special place in my heart. And I completely forgot that Conan's father is played by William Smith, who is also a character in Hell Comes to Frogtown. Now, that scene there, it's the only scene that I'm unsure of whether or not the sky is CGI. Now, there wasn't a lot of CGI back then, but it just looks so freaking blue and clear, and the way they're framed against it, it made me think that maybe it was indeed a CGI sky. Other than that, everything is very real and very visceral, and considering that, you know, the costumes and stuff like that, I felt worked out real well for this film. There were some scenes that I thought could use a little more, set decoration than what they had. But I was pleasantly surprised at some of the towns and cities that we see, how busy they were. A lot of times you do a fantasy film, you don't have a big crew or a big, big staff of people to fill out the extras and make it seem like it's a bustling town in the middle of nowhere. And usually they're rather, you know, we get like a background shot, an establishing shot of the city, and then you come in and it's like kind of empty. We just have our main characters. That wasn't the case in this one. You had an opportunity to show a lot of different people walking around and doing things and showing that, in fact, the city was important. It was an important part of trade for these people, and that there was a lot going on. And I like the fact that you have the cultural aspects of, like, these different cultures coming together and seeing things they've never seen before that they don't know about. And we especially see that with Conan, who's had a very sheltered life. His life has been very simple. You know, he's captured, and then we see him turning a wheel. I'm assuming the wheel is to. I'm not sure what the wheel is for. At first, I thought it was some kind of wheel to. I think that the wheel is to provide some sort of power or something to swordsmithing. Is kind of the way that I looked at it. But he was a young boy, and he gets on the wheel with a bunch of other people, and so that's where he gets his muscles. So I always thought it was kind of funny that you capture somebody and then you give them extraordinary strength. And then they say, hey, you know, we're going to make this guy fight in a pit. So he becomes a pit fighter. So they give him weapons, too. So they do everything pretty much to empower the guy while trying to keep him as a slave. And it is definitely – we see them trying to keep the slave mentality in his brain so that he doesn't think of being free or worry about freedom, because they give him so many accolades. They give him women. They give him food. They let him practice with a sword. They teach him fighting skills. They give him all these things and treat him like he's special, so he doesn't want to run away, you know, obviously. The very first pit fight, it's a very simple fight, two guys in a pit, and it's not it's more like how I imagine a fight like that would go down, rather than something very theatrical today where you'd have people running around and all kind of different weapons and everybody posturing. It's basically you two, one of you guys are going to live and one of you guys aren't. And he's not sure what's going on, and this guy is pounding on him, and a very brutal scene where he takes – it's not brutal like as like a lot of blood or anything like that. It's just brutal in the fact that it's very – tactical. He puts the guy's arm behind his back and keeps pounding on his elbow till the guy's arm breaks, and then he kills him. And we see a lot of scenes where he is winning battle after battle in the pit. Obviously, he's very strong and he's very, very good at using the sword. And then they continue to train him. Now, the next scene is after he's won a lot of things, and it's just kind of showing his Conan's mentality. He's got a very simple philosophy in life, and I love this scene. It really kind of, for a 30-second scene, really kind of sums up Conan in the early days.
My fear is that my sons will never understand me.
How, Daje? We've won again.
This is good. But what is best in life?
The open step, fleet oars, falcons at your wrist, and the wind in your hair.
Wrong! Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good. That is good.
Now Conan comes across a witch. He's trying to find the people of Set, who is the people that just killed everybody in his village and kidnapped him and sold him into slavery. And he's always got this in the back of his mind. He wants revenge for them killing both of his parents and destroying his village and his people. And so he comes across this witch and thinks she might be able to give him some information. Unfortunately, at the time, he doesn't know she's a witch. She turns into a witch. He ends up defeating her, and he finds somebody outside who is a thief who's chained outside. So these two become friends, and they decide that they're going to be thieves. That's what they're going to do. That's how they're going to survive. So they actually find one of the temples of Set, which are popping up everywhere in all these cities all over the place. And they are able to go in, and we have this is a long part of a big part of the story. They break into the temple, the three of them, and they're able to steal this giant ruby eye from a snake, because Set's all about snakes. And they also accidentally, inadvertently, wake up a giant snake that Conan kills. And of course, you know, the people of Set are very upset because this was their pet. And we see the way Set works. There's like some human sacrifice involved. There's a lot of brainwashing involved. You know, it is very much a cult in every sense of the word. They're celebrating because they pulled it off, and because now they're really wealthy because of this, and they're pretty happy that they were able to do this. And of course, Conan and Valerie, they form a relationship. And during this time when they're drinking and carousing and carrying on, these guards show up and take them, take all three of them and basically arrest them and take them in front of a king. We don't know who this person is. We don't know, you know, why, how he knows this, but they have this exchange with him.
You know what you've done? Why, Rexxar himself has come before me, threatened me, the king. What daring! What outrageousness! What insolence! What arrogance! I salute you. False doom. I've chafed for years at this demigod. Snakes in my beautiful city. To the west, Nemedia Aquilonia. To the south, Carth Stygia. Snakes! Everywhere, these evil towers. You alone have stood up to their gods. And what are you? Thieves! You seen this? They call it the fangs of the serpent. And this one was thrust into a father's heart by his very son. And my own daughter has fallen under this Thulsa-Doom's spell. Is there a dagger such as this in her hand for me? She follows him as a slave, seeking for the truth of her soul, as if I could not give it to her. As we speak, my daughter travels east to Thulsa Doom and his mountain of power. She is to be his. Steal my daughter back. Take all you can carry. There's more. There's much more. Enough to become kings yourself. There comes a time, thief, when the jewels cease to sparkle, when the gold loses its luster, when the throne room becomes a prison, and all that is left is a father's love for his child.
And of course, the king is played by Max von Sydow. You should probably know that voice. Does a really great job of being a king, but just everything kind of looking a little ratty because he is just, like he says in the sound clip there, he's just very unhappy. You know, he's all about his kids. You can only have so much money, and he's unhappy with the way things are, and the fact that I don't even think it's so much that. He doesn't have the power he thought he had, but just a matter of losing his children to this stupid cult, you know, and other people of power losing their children. He's just not a happy guy. So he presents this to the three, and the other ones decide, they're not going to do this because it's dangerous. Well, Valerie and Conan go to bed together, and she wakes up, and he's gone. And here he travels and trying to find... you know, the leader of Set and find out what's going on. And so he pretends to be a member of you know, the masses trying to join Set and manages to infiltrate to a certain extent. Well, they recognize him and the bodyguards, a couple, there's like three in particular, but they are able to, you know, they kind of beat the crap out of him and then present him, to the leader of Set, who realizes who Conan is. Now, of course, James Earl Jones plays the leader of Set, who's Thulsa Doom, and he does an excellent job. I think that everybody knows him from his voice, and he hasn't had a lot of big acting parts once he reached a certain age. I just think that, you know, I mean, he just became so well known for his voice, I think, is probably part of the problem. I've seen him in other films where, you know, he's played somebody, you know, not like a fantasy or an action film or something like that. They've been dramas, you know, and he's an excellent actor. And I thought he did a really good job in this, considering what his part was. And I think that we have these moments of clarity when he's explaining what he's all about.
Where is the eye of the serpent? Rexor says that you gave it to a girl, probably for a mere night's pleasure. What a loss. People have no grasp of what they do. You broke into my house, stole my property, murdered my servants and my pets, and that is what grieves me the most.
You killed my snake. Thorgrim is beside himself with grief.
He raised that snake from the time it was born.
He killed my mother. He killed my father. He killed my people. You took my father's sword. Ha! Ha!
Must have been when I was younger. There was a time, boy, when I searched for steel. And steel meant more to me than gold or jewels.
The riddle of steel.
Yes. You know what it is, don't you, boy? Shall I tell you? It's the least I can do. Steel isn't strong, boy. Flesh is stronger. Look around you. There, on the rocks. That beautiful girl.
Come to me, my child.
That is strength, boy. That is power. The strength and power of flesh. What is steel compared to the hand that wields it?
Look at the strength of your body, the desire in your heart.
I gave you this. Such a waste. Contemplate this on the tree of woe.
Now, a couple things happen here. You know, during that scene, he calls a girl from a cliff, and that's what you hear crashing to the ground, you know, basically saying that being able to control people is where real power's at, having them follow you blindly. Now, when Conan first comes into this area, he comes across a wizard who we also see in Conan the Destroyer, which is a different movie I'll talk about a bit when I'm done with this. And, you know, the wizard lives in this place by himself, and it's a graveyard, but it's there's so many, like, little monuments everywhere, you know, but definitely a burial ground of some sort. And so they put Conan on a tree of woe, and what we don't know at the time is that his friends have managed to find the wizard, and we don't see this, but they do find the wizard, and they kind of know what Conan's trying to do. Now, I have to mention that the first time I experienced this story of Conan was in the novelization, because although there was no way I was going to be allowed to see this film because I was too young, I had no problems with me buying books. I could pretty much buy any book I wanted and read. That's just the way growing up. Like, I was not, I mean, if it was something completely outrageous, and then maybe no, but I picked this book up and I read it. And I remember reading the scene of Conan on a tree of woe. And it was a big deal to me because I'm like, oh my God, like at the time I had never experienced it. I'm like, how's he going to survive this? He's freaking crucified to this tree. And no, in the desert, no water or anything. He can't move. He can't get free. And you have one of the buzzards on the tree is mechanical, which I didn't realize. Well, I mean, it doesn't tell you that in the book, obviously, because in the book, it's, you know, we're telling the story. But I found that out later on. And what happens is that he waits till one of the buzzards comes down and tries to, like, pluck out his eye. And he bites it in the neck and drinks its blood. And that's how he gets fluid to survive the desert heat and the exhaustion and everything else going on. So he does this, and then he sees his friends coming over the hill, and they rescue him, and they take him back. I mean, he's in really bad shape. They take him back to the wizard. And Valerie and the wizard have this exchange.
He said you were a wizard. Do the gods owe you any favors?
There are dangers, but I see you care little for those. The spirit of this place extract a heavy toll.
Then I will pay them.
And with that, they prepare Conan's body. So what the wizard does is he puts all these symbols all over his body, and they tie him down. They put four stakes in the ground, and they tie him down. And then they wait. And what happens is we see, this is some animation that they put in here, which is not great. And I would rather, like, the animation is, it ends up being little demons trying to take his soul and his body. And so when this is going on, Valerie jumps on the body, and she's trying to hold it down and you know, keep them from taking Conan. And the idea is that if he survives the night and his body's still there, then he will survive. This is the weakest part, obviously, due to the age of what they did here. I didn't mind, like, the swirls of color and everything where it seemed like, and the body floating up in the air. But when they turned into little demons, I just felt that it was, they could have avoided that. They could have not shown that, considering the movie has been pretty good about not spoon feeding us what's going on. You know, we have no dialogue in the first part of the film. We just follow along the story visually. I felt they could have left that out. We didn't need to see her, like, trying to swipe at the demons. It doesn't even, the animation and her acting doesn't even match up very well. You know, as far as, like, what she's swinging at and things like that, they could have just done, like, the swirls of color and stuff like that. A minor quibble, very minor quibble. The point is, you get the point, you know, that the point comes across. They try, they can't take his body. He survives. And then the next day, or as he heals, he trains, and he decides that he's going to go and rescue this girl because he needs to, you know, I don't know if he sets out, it's never clear to me if he sets out to go rescue this girl, if he's going to kill Thulsa Doom or what, but they have a conversation around the campfire, and they're like, okay, we're going to get the girl, and that's it, right? And they're like, we're not going for revenge, yada, 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 right, Conan? He doesn't say anything. He just keeps sharpening his blade. So I'm never sure of his motivation in this, if he's just like, this is a job, and kidnapping her, taking her back from Thulsa Doom is enough revenge or not. Well, this is where things kind of get interesting, because when they go to rescue the girl, there's a scene where it's a kind of like a pleasure cove, you know, where these people are, there's all these women and men, and there's like kind of like an orgy kind of thing going on, but not like overly graphic. You know, you might see a boob or something, but no big deal, you know. And they're making this big stew, then there's like hands and eyes and stuff in it that they're eating. And during this time, Thulsa Doom gets very calm, and he turns into a snake. We see it happen. And then they rescue the girl, and they're on their way out. This is a great scene. I mean, I love this whole, they get prepared for battle. They take this makeup, and they take this black stuff, and they put it all over themselves, so they blend in the background. They all just look completely badass in this part. They get her, they're escaping on horseback, and Thulsa Doom pulls out a snake, and he straightens it like an arrow, and he shoots Valerie in the side with it. So naturally, she's mortally wounded. She ends up dying, and then we have this... This funeral thing, and it's a minor thing, but when they first meet the wizard, he says fires won't burn here. And again, Conan makes a pyre with her body, and he's like, no fire is ever going to burn here. And I think it's kind of showing the fire does indeed burn, and the wizard is surprised, and I think it's showing that the powers that be, the gods that, you know, she promised that she would pay the toll, are letting this happen because it's time to pay that toll. And I really like it. We have it's a corny bit of dialogue. But I kind of like it because it kind of shows that his two comrades that have been traveling with Conan and doing these things with him have an understanding of him and what makes him tick and what he's like.
Why do you pry?
He is Conan, Famarian. He won't cry. So I cry for him.
So after this, of course, Conan's pissed. You know, he's like, well, he's like, I know they're going to come for me. and I can't let that happen. So they take the burial ground and they set up traps and they get everything ready. The wizard finds all these old weapons and stuff, and I'm pretty sure he grave robbed to get them all. And so they strategically place them around. This is kind of showing Conan the strategist. You know, he's learned enough in war and enough fighting. And although we don't get the idea that he's actually been in any wars or anything like that, or any kind of gigantic group combat, but we see it all coming together here. And he's ready for these guys. He knows they're going to come, and he's going to take them out when they come. This is how it has to end. There's no way. There's no escape. This is how things have to go. So it's him and the wizard and the thief, and who's also a bowmaster. So they're going to take on the whoever Thulsa Doom sends. And so Thulsa Doom comes himself with his two right-hand bodyguard henchman guy. One guy has a big hammer, one guy's just big, and also miscellaneous warriors, and they're able to through traps and stuff like that to slowly whittle them down a little bit. But before the battle, when they're all coming, we see them coming by horseback, and there's a big dust cloud coming this way. Conan talks to Crom.
Crom, I've never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we were good men or bad, why we fought or why we died. No. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Valor pleases you, Crom. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge. And if you do not listen, then the hell with you.
The battle ensues, and we have one kind of supernatural moment here. I mean, granted, we had the demons and the gods and stuff like that that we saw a little bit of, but we have a major supernatural moment that I didn't think was going to happen. I didn't see this coming, even in the book. And then when I saw the film, even though I knew it was coming up, it was everything I wanted it to be. Conan is in battle with one of the main henchmen, and he's down for the count. You know, he gets knocked down. The guy's getting ready to slice him open with a sword. And suddenly the blow is deflected, and Valerie standing there in full silver armor, sparkling in the light, just looking just spit and polished like an angel. And she's like, "Do you want to live forever?" Which is the line she used one other time in the film. And then his eyes clear and she's gone. And then he gets up and he defeats the guy. So he manages to defeat everybody except for Thulsa Doom, who the girl is tied to a stone, you know, the captured king's daughter. That's what they're using as bait. She's tied, chained up to a stone, and rather than trying to rescue her, he gets a snake and he straightens it out and he shoots it at her. Well, the thief sees it coming, gets a shield, and jumps in front of her and deflects it. And she still hasn't really woken up to the fact that he was going to kill her, that, you know, that he doesn't want her or whatever. I mean, she's starting to come around, but still kind of like, nah. Well, at this point, Conan's had enough, and he's going after him. So he manages to sneak. And it's cool because, like, this part of the film is not a long part, but it's just kind of like a very final part. Like, he's achieved what he wanted to achieve as far as saving her and, you know, doing what he wanted to do. You know, the mission initially set out for, but now he's going back. Now it's all about him. It's not about anybody else. He doesn't tell anybody else he's going. He gets up and he goes and he infiltrates Thulsa Doom's thing. And Thulsa is he's speaking to the masses, and he's like high up, and there's just a whole bunch of people holding candles dressed in white, listening to everything he has to say. And he's talking about having to, you know, like taking over the world or whatever. And Conan comes up and just faces Thulsa Doom directly. Like, he's not, at this point in time, he's not trying to hide. He just walks up to him and he's looking at him, and him and Thulsa Doom have this exchange.
My child, you have come to me, my son. For who now is your father if it is not me? Who gave you the will to live? I am the wellspring from which you flow. When I am gone, you will have never been. What will your world be without me? My son,
And of course, when he says my son, the first thing that pops into my head is Darth Vader in Star Wars. But, you know, hey. Well, he says that, and then Conan just lops off his head. And he doesn't just, like, you know, he, like, lops it off and doesn't just, like, lop it off. He lops it off and then picks it up and just chucks it down to the crowd. So everybody in a very quiet, I don't know, I found it kind of creepy. They slowly walk over to the pond that's in the pool, the stone pool that is in the center of all this, and start throwing their candles in and walking away. I'm assuming they're heading home because their guy is dead, you know. And there's, you know, that's pretty much the end of the film. Like, he has done that. I love that final exchange where he's like, you know, basically, I made you. And that's kind of how it is, you know. Conan completed what he wanted to do. He doesn't. He walks down and grabs an oil pot that's burning there for light and swings it, this huge pot. He swings it and throws it into the temple, and it catches on fire and then slowly burns down. You know, it's made of stone. I'm not exactly sure how it burns, but hey, neither here nor there, you know. It burns down, and that's just kind of how it ends. Now, after the... After it fades to black, we get a picture of I love this. This is like one of my favorite things of the whole movie, because this is very much like King Conan, like just like the comic book. He's sitting on a throne wearing a weird kind of crown that has, you know, still looks very much like Conan and very much like the Barbarian, but still he's kind of aged a little bit, and you can just tell he has just the weight of the world is on his shoulders as King Conan. And we get this this final little bit of narration from the wizard, who's the person who narrates in the beginning. Initially, they wanted Schwarzenegger to do it, but they weren't happy with his accent, so they got the wizard to narrate. And so we get this final little bit, which gets everybody excited, because we think there's going to be a King Conan movie.
So did Conan return the wayward daughter of King Osric to her home, and having no further concern, he and his companion sought adventure in the West. Many wars and feuds did Conan fight. Honor and fear were heaped upon his name. In time, he became a king by his own hand. This story shall also be told.
But of course, the story wasn't also told. We get Conan Destroyer 2 years later in 84. And although I like this film because there's a lot more characters with a lot more interesting fighting skills and weapons of choice. We had Grace Jones in it. And she used a staff, which I thought was really cool. I enjoyed Conan Destroyer a lot. I enjoyed the fact that they were working together as like a team. They had different skills. And I enjoyed seeing the different side of Conan, like when he gets drunk and things like that. And it was an interesting film. What I didn't enjoy was the villain, which was like a demon, a sorcerer demon thing, which had been done 1,000 times. I felt that part was kind of boring when I go back and rewatch. That's why I love Conan the Barbarian so much. He's dealing with we have some supernatural elements, but we're dealing with something that's very real and very, you know, being able to control people and have them follow you blindly is a very... scary thing. It's a very hard enemy to defeat, and I thought that was, to me, the best part of this movie. You have to have a good villain. It can't just be somebody who's like super scary or something like that, or somebody who has some kind of metaphysical power or supernatural power. This is a power over people just from using your words, and I felt as though this was fantastic. It's kind of like the little man against the, you know, against the world, the guy, you know, the small man against the power, Dave and Goliath story. I mean, it was just a fantastic story, the way it put together. I love this film. This is 4 stars out of 5 for me. I'm still doing the 5-star Netflix rating, even though Netflix has done thumbs up and thumbs down. Yeah, not really down with that. So I'm going to stick with the 5-star deal. This is 4 out of 5. I mean, I love the movie. The music is fantastic. The acting was all spot on. I thought that Schwarzenegger did a fantastic job as Conan. And talk about the perfect first role. He didn't quite have, his accent was still real thick. But he didn't have a lot of speaking parts in this. And everything just came together really well. There's a lot of people injured on this film. There's a lot of, if you go to IMDb and look at like all the background stuff, there's a lot of background stuff on this, like just a ton of, of things that had happened, and stuntman being injured badly. I mean, it's crazy what they did to make this film. The history of the movie, the first script was like 4 hours long, and they had to trim it back. The studio wasn't going to make the movie, then they were going to make the movie, then they didn't want Schwarzenegger for it, and the guy was like, this is the only person that's ever going to play Conan, and et cetera, et cetera. Conan Destroyer, although it's a good movie, it's not, it just has, my problem mainly is with the villain and all the supernatural stuff. It looks incredibly cheesy, but it's just that I didn't feel threatened by the villain at all. It's one of those Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing where there's that one thing that if you remove that, then all the power is gone kind of deal. And it was not as exciting for me. However, Red Sonja, which also had that kind of thing going on with the demon and all that stuff. There were scenes where Schwarzenegger, they didn't say it was Conan, but, you know, clearly acted and seemed like Conan, had several sword fights with Sonja and joined the movie at certain parts. And I thought that was much better for like a sequel than Conan the Destroyer. And then we have the remake of Conan from several years ago. And although I feel they feel as though they picked the right person for Conan, and I feel as though there were a lot of elements that I enjoyed about the film, I really need to go back and watch it again. I watched it and I just did not, it wasn't that I didn't like the film. It just did not engage me at all. I did not care about Conan. I did not feel anything about him. You know, I didn't feel as though there was anything really on the line. It was just kind of like ho-hum, you know, and that's definitely that's definitely more of the writing of the film. You know, I enjoyed seeing what made Conan. You know, he was a boy, they gave him, you know, he turned the wheel, made, you know, got muscles and got big from that, and then they trained him to fight in the pit, and then they granted him, you know, one of the characters granted him his freedom because he couldn't see him live like this anymore. And that's just, it's just kind of the whole, like, being free isn't even a big part, you know, isn't a big part of it. He just came in and was like, you're free, run, you know, and that was it. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to try to, I guess, some kind of big conspiracy to get him out of there. You know, it just, you know, the guy was just like, yeah, I can't keep you tied up here. You've done all this stuff. Go, you know? So I felt as though the pacing was perfect and everything worked real well in the movie. And the villain was just fantastic. If you haven't gone back and revisited this film, I highly recommend it. There's some dated things about it that, you know, we live in a time where we do a lot of jump cuts. We spend a lot of time, a huge amount of time trying to streamline costumes and try to make them more, I felt as though like the costumes are more realistic. You know, you're wearing all these armor, you're wearing all these furs, you're big, you're bulky. That's just the way there is to it. There's no way to look good in this stuff. And I feel as though now, like when you see Game of Thrones and things like that, when they try to dress these characters, you know, we use today's sensibility and trying to make things fit tighter and fit in a way that accentuates their body. And back then it wasn't like that. You know, this is very real, on how I feel people would, back then it wasn't about style. You know, it was definitely about comfort and making sure that you didn't freeze to death or that you didn't die in battle with the armor and things like that. I felt as though we had a nice group of people, and I feel as though the film really came together. And I'm really sorry that the King Conan movie seems to be dead right now, and that's a real shame. Schwarzenegger's not getting any younger, and I can see him playing this part perfectly. And I really wish that that they would reconsider that, because I think that would be a great ending to the Conan saga. Yeah, they can do a reboot if they want, you know, but they've tried that. It didn't really work out. I'm not exactly sure if it's too soon to do another one or if anybody's even interested in doing another one, but King Conan with Schwarzenegger would be the perfect ending to this to these films. And I include Red Sonja in there because I think that he was playing Conan. You may call him Conan. I believe that was the character that he was bringing forth in that. And yeah, in the Marvel Comics, when they had Sonja, they definitely did crossovers and things like that. And we get to see a lot of the sword and sorcery stuff going on. But anyway, that's it for this episode of Sci-Fi Dig. I've been trying to catch up on my comic reading and trying to catch up on some television shows and in regular fashion for me. I have a bunch of stuff on my DVR that hasn't been watched yet because I haven't had time. And so what I decided to do was just start watching The Magicians on Netflix because, you know, I don't have enough stuff on my DVR. I've watched 4 or 5 episodes of that, and I've really enjoyed it. I started that when it first came out, season 1, the first episode. Didn't grab me. Didn't love it. kind of backed away. Then I kept seeing advertisements for season two, and it just looked so good, and I wanted to watch it so bad. It looked so great. So I'm like, I'm going to have to dive back in. So gave it my full-on attention and kind of got sucked in to what was going on there. So season two isn't available on Netflix yet, but I haven't finished season one. But Sci-Fi has an app that I'm able to access. It has commercials or whatever, but I don't care. I can watch it if I am so inclined to watch it on my phone or whatever. And I will, I'm going to probably watch some of that. I've watched the first several episodes of Doctor Who, kind of behind on that, really digging what's going on there. The writing's back, and I'm really enjoying the heck out of Doctor Who. And I haven't, as of yet, picked another film for this. I was trying so hard for two shows a month, or, you know, once every 2 weeks, but things have been kind of crazy, and it just seems like the time is always slipping away. And today I actually have to work today on my day off, but I had an hour before, and I'm like, I've just tried to rush to get this, get everything set up so I get this recorded. I'm running my first official half marathon on Saturday, so I have to get some training. Well, at this point, either I'm ready or I'm not. I'm not worried about finishing it. That's not a problem. I'm worried about doing a really good time on it, and I'm not even sure how they're going to corral us yet, if that's going to screw up my time or what, but I know it'll be under 2 hours unless the corral is really bad. But I've been doing a lot of different speed training and things like that for this, and I'm really nervous about doing it. I mean, I'm not worried about it. I don't even know why I'm nervous. This is a piece of cake. I mean, I can run 15 miles. It's not a problem. It's just a matter of just time and things like that. Just kind of nervous about it. But that's been kind of on my on the front of everything, just training for this and adding some additional training that I hadn't been doing. I run every day, but it's not just running. It's, you know, intermittent speed training as well to try to get my time down. So, but pretty excited about that. Those of you that follow me on social media, I'm sure that you'll see I'll be posting some pictures, because if I survive it, I'm going to put a picture of me in my number. I know I'll be in the top 30. Because look at last year's times, and if they hold true, I know that the top 30 times, I know that I'll be in there somewhere. So hopefully. So that's all I got going on. I will talk to everybody next time. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out.